interessant, dass wir keine Beziehung zu der Zeitung sehen. Can I find out who is here? Is Ansel here? Okay. And then spot ask an invitation. Good morning, honorable members, good morning to the members of the OCDC, the council, and everyone here with us. A very warm welcome. We are meeting this morning to engage with SABC. We're supposed to also meet with communication, then it's arts and culture. And this meeting comes as a result of the public hearings that we held, whereby the stakeholders who were invited, the civil society, the NGOs, raised some concerns and challenges. And hence we have this meeting so that together we can be able to ascertain as to what is it that we have regarding the challenges, whether the challenges that we have we can be able to overcome, but I think it will be helpful for the committee really to get the responses from those concerns that were raised. We shall then start with arts and culture. To take us through their presentation. Okay. Can we then proceed to pencil? If you could please tell us who you are, and then get straight away onto the, you know, your input.
Thank you. Good question. My name is Nkosi Zwane. I've been appointed as Kateka CEO at Mensah with both accounting officer and accounting authority for the people who will be here so the 13th of June.
Can I ask you, can I make a request that you come closer? Because I think this venue is too big and we hardly hear you. Yeah, can I also ask a consult to do the same?
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start again. My name is Mkolisi Zwane. I have been appointed as caretaker CEO at Petsouth on 13th June 2012. This was as a result of the minister having dissolved the board at Petsouth. So I commenced duty on 15th June, and I'm here representing Petsouth. We have received communication from the Department of Arts and Culture requesting us to respond on what Petsouth has been doing with regard to sign languages. We've prepared a document which outlines that. I believe the copies have been made for all members to look at that. The contents of our report contains the following. We do the introduction, we go to the background, the programs that Petsouth has been involved on, including awareness campaign, programs that have been funded, and other partnership programs with other stakeholders. We deal with challenges we are facing now and conclude. I'll start by thanking this portfolio committee for giving Petsouth the opportunity to come and address and do this presentation. We are responding to the invitation and a briefing on what support have we given to South African sign language, and more in particular to deaf in our community or in society. Starting with the background, we say as a result of the dawn of the democracy and the inclusion of sign language in the constitution created a space for deaf people to participate in the development and promotion and other activities of this of the language rights and provided in the constitution, and the number of people that we have been able to reach is 412,421, which is are deaf people, and 1,237,264 people who have problems with hearing. These are statistics that were given in Statistics SA in 2001. And since 1996, the development of sign language has been recognized and been put in the forefront through the education white paper. Recognizing the situations outlined above, as Petsouth, we identify a need to put in place the awareness campaign for the purpose of assisting the deaf to come out openly through engagement in education opportunities and other social services. Like other South, with the intention of making them like other South Africans to equally take these opportunities. We're also involved in conscientizing the hearing about deafness, deaf culture, and SA sign language interpretation service. Our programs since then, programs and projects implemented by Petsouth are in line with the following. The recognition of the sign language as part of South African language, the creation of space and an environment that ensure that the use and the development of sign language operates in all key domains of society. In trying to ensure that Petsouth and relevant bodies attend to the development needs of language. We're also providing advice to relevant bodies and individuals on sign language and strategies of promoting it as part of multilingualism in South Africa. The monitoring the implementation of projects and programs that promote the development and use, and also to protect the linguistic rights of the deaf. Following its outline of programs that has been started at PenFans, which relates firstly on orientation on deafness, deaf culture, the sign language and basic. And this is a continuous thing that continues to be done in the province. The aim is to introduce primarily hearing people to deaf culture and South African sign language. The targeted audience is all stakeholders who have felt anything to do with people or organs of state where services are rendered to all South Africans. We've also conducted workshops on parents of deaf children. But this has been limited to two provinces, and it has happened between the year 2003 and 2007, just to assist the parents to deal with the challenges. Then public workshops during the Deaf Awareness Month to promote the language and the deaf culture. It is continuous in all provinces through our provincial offices. This is done on a continuous basis. The interpretation workshop, there has been a limit there. It is aimed at going to all provinces, but it has only succeeded in Mpumalanga province. It is meant to inform and educate the deaf community on the availability of the sign language, the interpreter, code of ethics, and the linguistic rights of the deaf people. Training of the frontline health worker, that we equip the frontline workers with basic sign language skills. This happened between 2006 and 2009, plus in the three provinces, Gauteng, Limpopo, and Western Cape. Then, advisory services on the sign language curriculum matters. The Department of Education is a continuous thing, so it's happening throughout the provinces, but through the education department. We produced a DVD on sign language health terminology to facilitate communication between deaf community and health practitioners. It's something that has been done and the health sector has it in 2009. There are programs that are fund-based, establishment of the infrastructure for development of sign language and skills, development for deaf. This happened in 2006. The focus was on the Institute for Deaf Association, which is based in the Western Cape, Westchester. We have also contributed, that is where PenSAP has funded what was happening, where associations or stakeholders dealing with development and promotion of sign languages was involved. The second funded project was the South African Sign Languages Interpreters, provision of interpreter services at the early childhood development for children with hearing loss, organized by Vets University. We have participated in funding that. The funding of training of sign language interpreters, also with the National Interpreters and Instructors. Funding of the development of learning materials in sign language. We've also done that. We dealt with other stakeholders on joint programs. Those programs that follow with stakeholders, DFSA, with the University of Free State, Vets University, Northwest Department of Arts and Culture, as well as with DAC, SAPC, and others. future program, we are in the process, as it has been planned, of hosting a sign language in Bizo in February 2013. It's aimed to bring together deaf stakeholders, organizations to further develop and promote the sign language. The Mbizo will also afford the national language bodies an opportunity to engage with stakeholders on critical topics to be covered in the standardization of the sign language. We also record the winning poems of and stories from Zwakala Project in November 2012. This will be distributed to schools for the deaf to promote literature development and the use of the language. Okay, we then go to challenges. There are serious challenges that we are experiencing at Spencer. They say there's a high employment rate of deaf people. At Spencer, we employ one, but we think other state organs can be able to employ deaf people after they've been trained to be able to deal with society. Discrimination of deaf people in general, and in particular in organs of state, where you find that the services that they require are not available, or there's no one to help them in interpretation. So it's the answer being that you will need to...
Sorry, Chair. Pardon. We can't hear you. Sorry.
Thank you. I'll go back to the challenge. I say. Okay. Thanks. They say the challenges, or dealing with the second challenge, is the discrimination and abuse of deaf people in general, and in particular in the organs of state. We believe more can be done in that. That's why we look at it as a challenge. So challenges on our side, what we think we should do to enhance and promote sign language. But there's time to critique without an answer. So we say there's non-observance and violation of linguistic rights of deaf people. But if organs of state cannot provide interpreting services in the language, it's their violation of their linguistic rights. We say there are uncoordinated efforts in the development of the sign language. We think we can participate in the coordination thereof to ensure that this is promoted properly. So there are 48, I think they've counted 48 schools for the deaf in the whole country. And the challenge is in Northern Cape, there's only one school. We don't think, I think it's a challenge. There's a shortage of accredited sign language service providers in the country, like interpreters, workers at most public institutions are not literate with the sign language. So that is why we said there need to be interpreting services at all state organs, because this creates barriers to Since sign language is a virtual language with no developed spelling and orthography rules. This in itself requires extensive consultation with stakeholders with a solid funding base. And we say training programs have been discontinued. Of course, these are problems that have been faced by Spencer in the past year. It's not necessarily related to the challenges of that. In conclusion, continued promotion of the development of and the use of the language remains one of our priorities. We have had a 2-day strategic session overall at Pensa, and the sign language featured is part of our strategic objective, where we have to all NLBs, province, all provincial NLBs and NLBs working on our commitment to address the linguistic disabilities committee has further addressed in our latest strategy document that we are finalizing. And that's all, Jefferson. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. As we sit here and actually follow the presentation, one becomes, more frustrated. Because as we sit here listening, you get more challenges, There are more challenges than what is supposed to happen. And the term South African Language Board. How old is this Language Board? We will take several questions from members, but if you can share with us as to what is happening. I'm not sure that we are getting anywhere with PANSAP. And more frustrating now, you hear of closing of the training program. I mean, this continuation of this training program due to lack of funding. This is frustrating. We are talking here about the most vulnerable. The most vulnerable persons in our society. And it seems like instead of progressing, we are going back to where we were. Can I give the committee an opportunity to raise questions of clarity, comments? I will note from going that side, Honorable Ngamalo, Honorable Seke, Honorable Peterson, Honorable Kekana, Honorable Dichitela, and Honorable Namun. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Siyabonga mangeke. I think IPANSA is facing more challenges. Seems that there's nothing that we're doing. Because really, I can just say, maybe SABC, they're trying. You can see if they're new, there's this person doing sign language. But really, in our community, in our police stations, in our clinics, if somebody who's deaf and dumb go to health services, she can't be helped because there's nobody who can understand what is happening. Even maybe if somebody being raped, deaf and dumb, going to the police station, there's nobody who can really help that person. We are facing real challenges, I think. You must work hard to fight, especially for the sign languages, everywhere, in courts, in police station, in clinics, because as we are seeing in our communities, if maybe even they come to our offices, you can see that they are struggling to tell us their problems. That means every department, they must have somebody who can translate to the sign to this person maybe who can't speak, who's, you know. And I think all of us in our community, we must try to understand, you know, to have this little booklet. There are people maybe who are giving out these little booklets with sign languages just to try to understand a few things, you know, but especially in our department. Thank you, Shabbatan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation. But I'm struggling, Chairperson, to get the information that I wanted from the pencil, because one, they've indicated in one of their slides that the use of sign language is one of their key priorities within pencil, and it is captured in their strategic objective. But I'm struggling to measure what they are saying with the presentation that they've presented today, because in terms of the program, actual program that they've presented, it tells us about the programs that was implemented in 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006. For me, it's outdated. What happened to the budget given, allocated to them in 2009, 2010, to the recent information? I think this information here, I think, is not sufficient for us. I'm just struggling, Chair. Maybe I can get clarity from Mr. Zwane. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thanking again, PENSAP, for the presentation, although really I think sharing from the member who just spoke now, I'm also struggling to understand the presentation itself, and it seemed as if, I don't know, it's too short and we don't really understand it. But then, nevertheless, I just wanted to know, you spoke about, on your awareness campaign, you spoke about assisting parents with deaf children to cope with challenges you mentioned. Why are you targeting only Gauteng and not West Province? What about the other provinces? How do you assist? I mean, I really don't understand, Chairperson. How do you assist in this regard? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The first one, when you quoted statistics, I think you said the statistics are 448,000 deaf and dumb people. And you said there are only 48 schools. I would like you to go through that again so that you have an idea how many schools are actually needed. You know, as government, if we know this is the target, it's better for us, because then we can check, we can monitor the achievement of the target rather than talking vague terms. Again, for FET colleges, for those different, I've quoted an example in this committee that I bought a bedroom suit from Red Shoe. I didn't know it was produced by a different dump. Just because it was more competitive, it was the best I could choose around the whole Red Shoe. And I only discovered later that the guy who produced it was actually a different dump. So there can be talent that is even able-bodied people, and you only discover after. So if we empower them, the disabled, by educating, skilling, then they can either be entrepreneurs or they can go into the labor market more competitive. Otherwise, with the discrimination that is there, they are doomed if they don't have skills. So I would really want to know, at FET college level, do you supply the language people there so that they can be assisted in FET colleges? The last point, the language, this type of language does it cut across all constitutional languages, 11 of them including? In other words, can you use sign language in Shangani, Venda, Ndebele, like Miam and Ndebele? And if you do it in English, is it international? Can you, are they using the same thing in the British English, American English, all over the world? Those are my questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just thank the presenter for being with us this morning. I would like to be honest, I don't understand the presentation. I don't say it's not right, but to me, I don't understand it properly. First of all, I would like to ask that, how do you make this information accessible to the public? The information of PENSEP. And why I ask is in the rural areas, you don't mention the rural areas and talk of Gauteng and Northwest, and I would like to know where in the Northwest. And if you can just finish us with the state of communities or schools where the workshops have been held. Because you said you have a continuous support on, I don't know whether it's the introduction, there's a continuous support and there's a worldwide complaint about the deaf and dumb not being looked after. But you mentioned your continuous support and the time that you have been in this PENSEP is more than 9 years. And the complaints are more than the achievements that you mentioned now. And one other thing that I would like to know is that are these schools that you're talking about, are they fully equipped with the working tools, and how is your monitoring doing? Do you monitor the schools, or you just mentioned the schools that have equipment in the schools? There's one thing that has been, I think it's a culture, that the deaf people are not competent to function in the senior level, like in the government. I'd like to know what PENSEP is doing on that. Thank you, Chair.
I am extremely disappointed in the presentation. I'm very honest about it. I was expecting much, much more. And it was the first time that I was really wanting to hear about PENSEP. And what came out of the presentation is not what I want to hear. I want to really have more info on what they are doing, how they are accessing the deaf communities, especially in the rural areas. And so many more issues that I would really like to know. But my question is, on your challenges you have, there are 48 schools for deaf in the country and only one in the Northern Cape province. Can you give us a breakdown for province of where the other 47 schools are? One we know is in the Northern Cape. Can you please give us a breakdown of where these schools are, in which provinces? And can you give us a contact number on each and every school? And then my colleague said, wanted to know if they're fully equipped and how do you monitor what goes on in those schools. And that is, I would also like to know that. And then shortages of accredited service providers. Since when are you aware of the shortages and what was done to at least increase the shortages of accredited service providers? What did you do up till now to increase? Because it's useless having the need for these people and the service, and you don't do anything about it. Then training programs have been discontinued due to lack of funding. When was the training programs discontinued? Last year, year before last, this year, and what has been done to access more funding? Because these concerns the rights of people that are infringed at this point in time. And then you spoke on various programs and projects. Can you elaborate more how about what these projects are and how do you implement them in partnership with you said with different stakeholders? Are these your different departments? The stats in the presentation is fairly old. You're working on 2001. Is this stats since 2001? Was there nothing for 2006? I've got some idea that there were stats at a later stage. And then, especially if you look at the program awareness campaigns that you had, it's all back to 2003. The latest one is 2009. And one wonders what happened in between or after 2009. Everything was everybody in the board grounded or what happened? And then advisory services on SASL curriculum matters. And it's a very important one to provide technical expertise on deaf matters. Now, that is a very interesting one. I think you can elaborate more on that and tell us more on that one. Chair, I'll stop there for now. Thank you. And oh yes, and the bursaries for sign language students of studies. I know that even our students at universities had problems with anything on bursaries that comes too late, or hearing aids that cannot be that does not come to them in time. And I feel it's a waste of good money. So can you please tell us why bursaries was only given to university, the Northwestern Department of Arts and Culture, and bursaries for sign language? Where did those bursaries go to? Did it go to all provinces or only to Northwest? Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe before you respond, you can also take these questions on the use of the official language bill was approved by Parliament yesterday. And the following is in the bill language policy and describe how the national department, national public entity, and public enterprise will effectively communicate with members of the public whose language of choice is not an official language contemplated in that paragraph B on the South African language sign. The other one is that DEFSA will be meeting with the minister to discuss the implementation of this act and also with PANSALP. How will PANSALP implement this new language bill?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think I'll start the question from answering on the formation of PANSALP. I think that's the first question you posed. PANSALP is formed through an act of 1995 and it started its operation in 1996. It has a mandate that is derived from Section 6 of the Constitution and the Act as it pushes it. I've explained, maybe I was still on the other side not being audible, that PANSALP over the past 4 years has had problems which have been in the public domain with it. I think in the past 4 years, since 2009 up to now 2012, PANSALP has had fights with its CEOs, with its boards, and what, up to where my appointment is on June this year, June 13th, as a result of the minister having dissolved the Pensar board after the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture concurred with the ministry that Pensar was not fulfilling its mandate. So I've been appointed as caretaker CEO to administrate and to find the turnaround on the way forward at Pensar. So what is between the second month of my appointment. So the presentation is based on what Pensar has done. And since my appointment, the focus has been on what Pensar should do as its original mandate, because my report in the first 30 days uncovered that Pensar has defocused itself from what it should do as its mandate and focus on all other things that are less important, the state of language. They have not followed the core mandate, but the secondary one. So that is the status of this report, is on the basis of that. And in trying to address that, after the 30 days report, what I have done as caretaker CEO, I have conducted a strategic planning session with all provincial bodies of Pensar, which is the session that we held last week from the 1st to the 3rd of August. Because in the provinces, Pensar is represented through the provincial language committees, the national language bodies, and the national lexicography units that are developing language through dictionaries. So these are all structures of Pensar that have come together to deal with the strategy going forward. We strategy will be presenting to the Portfolio Committee of Arts and Culture before the end of this month. Then I will come to some questions in trying to respond to questions. I think Pensar is charged with promoting and developing languages, but largely the mandate is not on implementation by Pensar. It's promoting and developing through these organs that they have, which is the duty of state departments to develop and to do something. So Pensar monitors authenticate and verify language development as it is happening. So that is the answer on the, I think, why everything that is contained here goes up to 2009. Because in 2009, Pensar, the board suspended its CEO, appointed the CEO. And it was court case after court case until now. That is why the dissolution. So there has not been progress in that. So the progress, I would say, on parents in Gauteng and Northwest, it was not necessarily, I would not think that the previous board, the management, had aimed to focus only on the two provinces. It was a start, and unfortunately, that's where it has ended. I think on the question of, but we are taking it as a challenge, and the strategy we are finalizing now takes into account, which is why all structures of Pensar were meeting at Beachwood on this 3-day strategic workshop, which we call the planning session, to ensure that Pensar has the necessary impact, because over the past 3.5 or 4 years it has not been. The linguistic, the statistics, I think to repeat them, the statistics is 412,421. Of course, it's outdated statistics as it can be seen, and I think we will work state and present it to the committee. But those are people who are deaf, and then there's 123,726 of nearly deaf but not deaf. So put together it's about over 500,000, I think, if we look at that. And they are updated, we have to look into that. The spread of schools in the information that I've picked up, I cannot say how many schools there and where, but that information I can be ready to bring it forward to the committee when I'm given the opportunity to do that. These are statistics that I just picked up. And the concern, which is why I'm not okay, the concern was that you can't have one school in the province, but all other schools have more than three schools in all other provinces. So the concern here, that is why we highlighted this as a challenge, that in the Northern Cape there's only one, and mostly I think during our workshop, Northern Cape was represented by a sign language practitioner. I think that's how it came out to do that. And sign language cuts across all languages. The interpreters that are trained are interpreters trained on, they have to know any other language, but sign language is it's one. So if your interpreter is conversant in seven languages out of what we have in the constitution, then it means that person can have interpretation services from the interpreter to all seven languages, depending on what they want. So, but sign language is one common, so it can go to that interpret English to him, or interpret Zulu to him, or interpret Xitsonga to him, any language you can interpret. As long as the interpreter is conversant with the other language that has to meet to be interpreted into sign language. Of course, the publicity of information, it's not sufficient. There has been, that is why I said that our report in the first 30 days finds that there was little focus on the core mandate of PENSA. And we now refocusing it on that. PENSA has had awards, annual awards, but the annual awards which are not focusing on promotion and development of the language properly. And I mean, in the period that has been there, the focus has been, was not only has PENSA lost focus on the core mandate, but there's been a lot of allegations of irregular spending, mismanagement and what. So my attention has been on both giving this one focus, but also trying to ensure, because it was as appointed in the audit period, it's audit, and there's a lot of other problems that have been occurring over the years, which I'm busy battling with now, but I'm finding my feet, and as I say, I can be ready to come back to the portfolio committee with my other progress report. I've had only a 30 days report. I think by end of the month I'll have a 60 days report which gives more information on where we should go and what problems we picked up. I think to ensure that there's enough services for sign languages, to increase, to develop the language itself so that we increase interpreters who will assist people with the need for that. And through that, if there can be, I mean, we can only promote and present, but state departments implement. There is no enforcing mechanism from PENSAS to force state departments to employ one interpreter per word or employ. So we can only monitor and talk about it, but we can't enforce. We can raise it through if the state department is discriminating, we can assist the person who is discriminated to approach the Human Rights Commission or the Equality Court or bring the thing, the concern forward to Parliament, but we can't enforce, we can't tell state departments what to do. We can only promote that. The other questions which relate to why programs of training being stopped and all projects not continuing is because in the past 4 years, I think the Portfolio Committee and Arts and Culture, as well as the Ministry, have accepted that PENSAL has not been effectively delivering on its mandate, hence the dissolution of the board in June. So those things are there. That is why people have not been doing anything. We've done a skills audit since my arrival, and we found that at certain stages we were sitting at head office with 8 language practitioners, supported by about 20 support staff, which is not a balance. You won't be able to discharge your mandate if you have more support staff than implementing stuff on the language. But we are fixing that now. The vacancy rate on language practitioners was higher than on support staff. There was over surplus on the other side. So it means there has been problems with leadership at PENSAL, both at its board and management. In what we, I can make an example on my first arrival at the place to try and meet with management. Everybody I met was acting CEO, acting HR, acting CFO, acting senior language practitioner, and now I had to dissolve those acting positions and try to find competent people who will do the job. So that's how the place has been managed, and I think it's known. Other comments from honorable members, I'll take that there can be good contributions for my consideration as well as PENSAL in going forward on bursaries and all these things that I have not been able in the time given to monitor how have they been doing that. Those are things I can go and do and be able to come back with some answers on the way forward before this committee. I will be coming to the Portfolio Committee of Arts and Culture before the end of the month, where I can be able to do that and repeat the same thing to the committee with specific focus on sign languages. I think the language bill, I've participated in the finalization of the language bill in the past 3 weeks, and as it was presented yesterday, we have emphasized from personal side that the interpretation services, because if we are focusing provinces on adopting a certain number of languages as part of their language policy, maybe 3 or 4 minimum of that, it will in any event make all other languages to need interpretation services should there be people, because people are not geographically, it can be the predominant languages that would be chosen, but there will still be people who deserve services out of state organs who do not converse in the languages that, so sign language also falls into that. Of course it falls across, but we need the interpretation services. So more bursaries on, I think the bursary scheme on sign language to focus, we will have to consider that as PENSAL in the development of the language itself in terms of deaf people getting bursaries, but there are people who have to complement them, that is the interpretation services, translation and interpretation services. More people, the more people we have in that, the better it can be. I've tried just to give the response. I would understand if it's not the sound fitting, but that's the background that I have. Given a month or two, I will be able to give better answers on certain things. But lastly, on the way forward, accepting that between the history of PENSAL, between 2008 9 and 2012 June, PanSouth has not been focusing on its mandate, except the issues within the province. Through the province, except we need to note where PanSouth is represented in the province, represented in all provinces through its provincial offices, and it has provincial language committees in all who play an oversight on behalf of the board. And the NLUs, which are National Lexicography Units, the development of dictionaries and what, are all housed in different universities in the different provinces, but they are language-based. You'll find the lexicography on Southern Sotho in the University of Free State, a lexicography in Uvenda, in the University of Venda, in the University of Zululand, in all provinces they are represented. Then you have the national language bodies, which primarily deal with sign language as part of their mandate, because they are verifying and authenticating all language development, all material that is written. I think I've tried the summarized way to give answers. If there are questions that I've missed, but as of chair, I'll be ready to attend them.
Thank you, Chairperson. My new question, I just want to find out which as South Africans, the sign language is not an official language in the Constitution now. What is the PANSAP doing to ensure South African sign language become an official language in the country? Maybe this will require a constitutional amendment. Is PANSAP doing anything about it?
Chair, the newly appointed CEO, you said you've been newly appointed to come with a turnaround strategy. My question is, I would like to know what time spent is that turnaround strategy, because often we get people telling us about turnaround strategy. After 5 years, they come again. I told you I'm doing a turnaround strategy, and it seems like it is indefinite. It's going on forever, just turnaround. I mean, if you're doing a turnaround strategy for 2 years, then the third year you must tell us, yes, it has turned around, and now we're going in a normal and straightforward way. But I'm just worried because this is a very popular way for CEOs to turn around, but they turn around just forever, and this wheel doesn't seem to be turning around. So that if you can't turn it around, you tell us, hey, I've put my shoulder to the wheel, maybe it has rusted, it isn't turning around. I mean, I am sure about it. So give us a time spell of some sort, 2 years, 1 year, 3 years, so that thereafter, we want to see the difference between turning around and moving the normal way.
Thank you, members. In answering these questions, can you also speak to the sign language? Because when we met with Bruno from DESA, he indicated that the Department of Basic Education promotes oralism and not South African sign language. So it means it's not being taught in all these 48 deaf schools.
In fact, only 3 or 4 of these schools offer matric, isn't it? So what is Transurb really doing in these schools? How many of the 48 schools actively use San Nawi with interpreters? I don't remember.
Thank you, Chair. I think my question was not fully answered. My question on where are the 47 schools? We know that one is in the Northern Cape. And can the CEO commit himself to give us a breakdown of these schools per province with a contact number? Thank you.
Then starting with the last one, as I indicated, the information is there and obtained and supplied, but I don't have it now. I said the focus on this one school in the Northern Cape was because how can one school be in a province? So, but other provinces have a minimum of 3, but the breakdown I can supply. And the the officializing the sign language, I should think it's the duty of this honorable parliament to make it one of the official languages. At Pensalt, we have the mandate is to develop and promote, and the development is limited to languages that were underdeveloped in the past. That is why we have the developmental mandate. But ours is promotion and ensuring the use and monitoring the use of the language in state institutions. But as we said, the implementing institutions still remains their responsibility to do that. It's not Pensal that is charged with implementing the changes at the institutions. It becomes a state organ. It becomes their function. So ours is monitoring and promoting the use and also development of the language to ensure that there's more on all languages, official languages. So I would say we can promote that sign language be considered and adopted as the official language, but it remains to the Honourable Parliament to consider and endorse that in terms of either doing it through constitution or doing it through any enactment of Parliament. The turnaround time span, we've agreed with the Minister, my appointment is with the ministry and the government to have to do that. And I've agreed that between 6 and 12 months we should find a strategy, and PENSAP should in that period should have appointed through the portfolio committee of arts and culture and the ministry, the board, and the board should be ready to appoint a CEO, and the strategy should be there to be followed. The board is also inducted properly the strategy and they adopted the ones adopted by Parliament. So it's not a permanent stay on my part on that. What the future holds can be discussed, but that's the agreement as it stands now. It cannot go beyond the 12 months of finding permanent solution on how we go forward. And Honourable Chair, on the sign language not being used by certain schools, I'll have to go and verify that. I'm not, I cannot be able to say yes or no at this point in time. We have to submit it to the breakdown of the schools. It's not information that I've had my hands on it. And in the process of the past, we'll say, call it 2 months maybe now, if we, or just before 2 months,
I've had to get to advertise and get competent staff to come and assist in this because the skill level and pencil was not sufficient to be able to deliver on the mandate as it stands. Because maybe, as I said, there has been mismanagement. Mismanagement on the other side cuts across. I think there was a report which the minister commissioned for Resolve Group to do an inquiry, and it came out with the findings that the skill levels, mismanagement, irregular expenditure, and all those other governance issues that were prevailing there. So in the period, I'm not finding an excuse. I have had to deal with governance issues whilst I also refocus the entity into its mandate. I think we're getting there, given maybe on my 60 days report, if I can come and address the Honourable Committee, I can come with more statistics on things.
Recently, I had many letters on my desk, and this refers to affirmative action. And I hear, CEO, that you say you are looking for competent people. Will affirmative action now play a pivotal part in you appointing competent persons to positions to take your not department, this board forward, Sunnet forward, Van South forward? I'm asking this because in series that reached me, I realized that so many competent, either partially disabled or disabled persons are outside the system, and you'll be surprised that fingers are pointed at affirmative actions that are being implemented when they apply for jobs. Will this be the situation, or what is the mandate of your board? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think the appointment of the board is initiated by the minister, and the minister and the Portfolio Committee of Arts and Culture nominate and agree on an ad hoc committee of 9 persons of reasonable spending, as they can be opted throughout the country from South African people. And then that ad hoc committee is then responsible for shortlisting candidates up to a number of 25, out of which everything is taken into account as the Act guides. And I think it includes affirmative action. And once the Portfolio Committee has finalized the 25, it's then given to the Ministry to appoint the number of board members, minimum being 15, and it goes up to 21. So it is up to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and the Portfolio Committee on Arts and Culture and the minister to take cognizance of all issues which are mentioned in the Constitution and all our enactments or acts of Parliament that should be taken into account. And thereafter, this board is the one that appoints the CEO to continue. But the board becomes an active board that monitors, and consideration should be taken, I think, for the board to have people with background as language practitioners. And I think some language should stand also. If I'm made to participate in any way, I think that advice or submission will be made. That, because in the past, I think what we've realized is board members, there were too many. At one stage, they said there was too many language practitioners as members of the board, which made them not to have an insight of looking on governance issues. But when they tried to change that in the following board, there were less language practitioners and too many governance people to make it now, not to also balance. So we need to strike a balance to ensure that all languages, that is why there was provision of 15 up to 21, but all languages, including sign language, at least are represented at the board level, and the rest of the other appointments can be on governance issues, be it finance and audit, legal, or whatever is necessary for governance to go. Those will be the two primary ones for consideration. But if all languages are represented, maybe it will make it better. But also trying to guard, because as council we've had through the workshop discovered that the constitution gives a mandate of the development of multilingualism. So if people represent different languages, they tend to hold on to languages and think that if I'm Zulu, I should be fighting for development of Zulu, whereas if I'm doing that, I'm actually violating the constitution. It should be for the development of all languages. So my participation should not be restricted to my home language or anything when I'm doing a job or participating in PENSA. But for my rights as a citizen, it's okay to define it as Zulu and what, but in terms of participation, so that we don't create a board which will further do what we are trying to undo in terms of promoting all languages equally. I don't know if that also gives the answer, but thank you, Honourable.
Thank you very much. I know that as the portfolio committee, we are always never 100% satisfied with the responses. And often when we interact with you, you make an attention to send, you know, information that is being requested that you don't have in your possession yet. So I would want to rest assured you that we are going to make a follow-up. If you can please send that information, because I don't think members, when they ask for information, just asking, you know, for the sake of asking. But I think as we exercise our oversight, we have to make sure that, you know, we actually represent the public, because they have no means of representing themselves. So if we do ask for information, please assist us in ensuring that you do send that information. You know, we really interacted with people who are very frustrated, and because of their vulnerability. So we have to work together to ensure that where we can, we should actually do it. You know, if when I was listening at Bruno, when he was talking about, you know, although it's not in your area, but, you know, referring to a deaf person, watching, you know, sitting there while the TV is playing, and he can't see the TV, but because they are not being provided, you know, with the necessary devices that will assist them, you can imagine how frustrating it is. All the same, thank you very much. We are meeting with you for the first time, and I don't think it is for the last time, because if we need to call you, we will call you again. Thanks. Can we proceed to the next presentation from SADC? If you can please introduce yourself.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, good morning. My name is Nada Wachela.
I'm the provincial general manager of the SADC for the Western Cape province. And I'm accompanied by Ayanda Grishe. He is the parliamentary liaison manager for the SADC. He works very closely with all the committees. Before I go into the presentation, I would like to pass the GCEO's sincere apologies for not being able to make it to this meeting, reason being that the notification for this session was given at very short notice. We were called last night to be notified ourselves and to be told we need to prepare such a presentation. So we have done the best that we could between 6:30 last night and this morning to come up with a decent and informative presentation, we hope. I would like Chairperson to assure the committee of the SADC's commitment, despite its funding challenges, to deliver on its mandate to educate and inform, specifically the designated groups of this country who depend on the public broadcaster solely for a connection to the world at large. In a developmental state like South Africa, with vast rural areas where the only source of information is still either radio or rumor, we can never renege on our responsibility to keep all South Africans connected. Like I said, we had very little time to put together this presentation, so we have left out radio and focused on television, because it was going to be easier, and most of the time we are judged on what television produces, which is not fair, but that's a fact. I know, for instance, that radio does a very good job in keeping disabled people connected to the outside world. For instance, even here at Sea Point, we've got a wheelchair-bound presenter. On RS here, she presents a prime time slot every week. I know also for a fact that before I left Umhlobo Wenene FM last year, we had just appointed permanently a blind, talented young man as a bulletin producer. And another young man from UTNAIC had won a radio presenting contest and he was given a weekly slot. So radio is doing a great deal, but we don't have a presentation at the moment from radio. If we had more time, we would have collected information from all our ATM radio stations. I will start with a summary of what our three television channels are doing to address issues of disability, and also zoom into the cost of producing those programs. SABC 1, all commissioned local content currently on SABC 1, except for entertainment or music-based programs and sports, are subtitled. And the cost of subtitling on average is 250 rand per minute. We have programs that profile individuals with disabilities or address issues of disability. Programs like SHIFT, we all know Zani Baloyi, who's been presenting SHIFT, who is blind, for many years. We have the Chat Room, Big Up, we have Cutting Edge, we have Play Your Part, which on Monday, the 30th of July last week, at 7 in the evening, they celebrated the achievements of a blind football trainer from Fort Lauderdale. We have Metrics Uploaded, which is hosted by a wheelchair-bound presenter. Our 5:30 news bulletin in the evening is signed, and that addresses the hearing impaired. But the channel is engaging SABC News about getting the 7:30 Nguni news bulletin, which is the most popular news bulletin on television, signed as well. I'm not sure what the challenge is right now that we don't have this particular bulletin signed, but the channel heads at SABC 1 are engaging SABC News for this particular bulletin. On SABC 2, at least 90% of the channel's local programming across the day has subtitles to accommodate the deaf and the hearing impaired. Sotho News Bulletin in prime time at 8:30 during weekdays is signed, and also the bulletin at 7:30 on Saturday and Sunday evening, and those two bulletins are signed. We have Mubango and 7 The Line, which are prime time properties on SABC2, and they have that timing. And coming to SABC3, Isidingo, which is a prime time property and a very popular property as well, is signed, yeah, or is subtitled wall to wall. We have DTV, which is a program produced specifically for the deaf community and broadcast on Sundays at 11:30 a.m. and repeated on Mondays at 8:30 a.m. And that program is signed and is specifically, like I said, directed at the deaf community. The SABC3 News Bulletin at 2100 is also signed. I would like now to move to the presentation that you have in front of you. I hope everybody did receive a copy, which gives a breakdown of all our programs that have subtitles or programs that specifically address issues of disability. I will start with SABC1. You will see that we have the day of the week that the program is flighted on, and a description of the program, whether it's a soapy or a drama or a documentary. That's now your second column. And the name of the program will be in your third column. And then we have a column for episodes per year. There are programs that come weekly, so those will have 52 episodes. Or other programs like the soapies are on daily, so we would have seasons. And then the next column will be the duration of the program in terms of minutes. You will see there's 24, there's 48. The 24-minute programs are your half-hour programs, but it's 24 minutes because the other 6 minutes is dedicated to advertising. So we don't have subtitles for adverts. And then the 250 is the cost per minute for subtitling of those programs, and then the total per annum. So all, like I said on SABC1, all of our locally produced content is subtitled, except for live programming or programming that is entertainment or music-based, or sports. Those programs are not subtitled. So the programs that you have in front of you from SABC1 are locally produced programs that are subtitled. Your Generation, your Zone 14, your Montanas, Kumbulekaya, your Skin Sam, Perfect Family, Chisa, In Debt, Friends Like These, Bonsanani, and the religious programs, also IKB or information knowledge based programs, various programs that are pre-recorded, also subtitled. And that gives you a total of 7,358,000 rand per annum that SABC1 spends on subtitling these programs. On SABC2, like you said, there's 90% of SABC2's programs are subtitled. So they have their soapies, 7 De Lan, Mubango, documentaries like 50-50, which are also subtitled, talk shows like Mutwako, drama, F. Saunders, Streets of Manga Wung, entertainment programs that are pre-recorded like Pasela are also subtitled. We have our sitcoms, we have religious programs as well on SABC2 that are subtitled, and some of those programs are weekly programs and some are seasonal programs. And we, on SABC2, we spend about 8.1 million to make sure that these programs are subtitled and are accessible to the deaf community. on S83, which is our commercial channel. Because S83 is a commercial channel, most of the content is foreign content, and but we try to subtitle the programs that are produced in the country, like Forgiving, like Isidingo, The Lab, which is a drama, and various sitcoms that we produce, and religious programs and documentaries that are flighted on SABC3. And SABC3 spends 4.2 million in subtitling. And that gives you a total of 19.7 million rand that the SABC spends per annum on subtitling this program. We would like to do more, but as you know, some of these issues are quite new to us, and some of our programs are foreign, and so we're still trying to find ways to make sure that all our programming is accessible. We also take into account integrating the disabled community into our program production. So it's not just subtitling and signing that we do to address disabled people. We have programs that are presented by disabled people. We have programs that are produced by disabled people, people that work behind the scenes as well as the SABC. And we have given example of those programs that are either produced or presented by disabled people, and there's quite a number of them. And when we go to our radio stations as well, there's quite a bit that the radio stations are doing. And that about sums up our presentation. We will be very happy to take any comments or concerns that the members might have to the channel head who could not be here today.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I think my last comment that I made to the previous presenter should be actually directed to yourself. Why are there no sign language interpreters or subtitles for national matters, you know, of relevance? Like, for instance, the presidential, you know, just to mention presidential Christmas message, you know, I think there are several others, you know, messages also. Even the, you know, the address by, you know, special address by the ministers and all the deputy president. For instance, we have this National Women's Day coming. What is it, you know, why is the subtitle and the sign language interpreter, you know, not being provided? If we can maybe share that. I will take honourable member Namun Chitelo, and his hand up honourable Diambo. Diemo. Oh, sorry, member Diemo, honourable Kekana, in that order.
Thank you for the presentation, and apologies for only knowing about it last night. It is rather sad. Perhaps we could have been provided with more info. I have only one question at this point in time, and what percentage of disabled people or persons are employed by the SABC? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Being notified last night, to me, this is satisfactory, really. You have people like Rulani, your disabled, are unknown and seen in the box. I think we should
say keep up the good job, but don't end up here. I've got only, I don't think it's a question. I need some clarity. And the first thing is that your first column in the SABC program for disabled. I think I didn't hear you mention it. Where is the 260, 39, 13? What is it for? If you can just tell me. And the clarity that I wanted. What happens to things like Olympics? And how do our disabled fit in there to think about? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mine is also, thanks for the presentation as well. Chairperson, mine is to say, you know, as members we used to complain and sometimes even send the presenters back for information now when I think it's from us. If we are sending invitations late to presenters, that will mean we won't have efficient information. But thank you very much for SABC to come up with whatever they have in their hand. Mine is just to check with them that what are their challenges, because I didn't hear any challenges that you raised in your presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, once more, thanks for the presentation that comes after an invitation that was sent, which you call short notice, of course. I mean, the second point is the presenters are representing more or less, because they come from Western Cape, one province. I know they've tried to represent a national picture. But I think when you send invitations, we should also send it to SAPC National at the head office so that we have a picture of what's happening in all provinces. The one point that I want to highlight is that disability, as you know, covers physical disability, speech, hearing, mental, intellectual, emotional, as some people define it, but it cut across all disabilities. And now, I don't think it's good to emphasize sign language, but would like to know just across all types of disability. I forgot also eyesight, which is blindness. It all, it represents all types of disability, and when we invite people to like to know what the total picture is, and also nationally, including community radios. Look, I know there was a guy called Peter Wise who announced on sports, motor car sports. His voice was so powerful on radio, SAFM. If you didn't know him, you wouldn't even notice that he's disabled. He was actually disabled with his hands, but he had such a powerful voice. Now, that is why I think there are opportunities even in radio for connectors to be employed there, because if somebody has a good voice and a good mind, he can do so well that you'd be surprised that he's disabled physically. So I would just want to request that even in rural communities where we've got community radios, which are actually run by MDDA and this government, which are a wing of SAPC, would like to know what is happening, either in terms of job opportunities, because there are great job opportunities, especially in the air media, in radio. So my request would be, when we invite next time, let's invite from SAPC head office so that we can get a total picture of what is happening. That's
no, thank you very much for the questions. I think
I need to respond to this one of an invitation that was sent out late. The invitation was sent out last week already, so the committee secretary only discovered when on Friday that when she was making a follow-up that they had not received it, and it is national that was invited, not the province. I think I want to agree with you that we really need to get a national perspective and not a provincial perspective. Let me allow you to respond to the question.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to start with your question, that of events of national interest. We do, for instance, with SONA, events that are standards, that are, standing on our calendar, because we know a year in advance that there's going to be SONA or the State of the Nation Address. We know specific events that they are going to happen, and we make the necessary preparation for those events so that we would have sign language experts, that will bring the bulletin or the speech to everybody. However, with events that happen at short notice, it becomes a challenge. The biggest challenge is always about money. It's a costly exercise to produce live programs at short notice. If we notified maybe this week that the minister is going to be launching a particular project next week, you're already faced with costs that you did not budget for, because you have to send crews, you have to accommodate them, there's transportation, there's linking costs, and there aren't too many people, that are always available to access the SABC with sign language. So it's something that has to be included in the planning well in advance. But it's a valid comment or criticism that we will take up to national. There was also a question about the percentage of disabled employees in the SABC. We wouldn't be able to give a full picture of this because, yes, we do know that with permanent employees, we have less than 5% of disabled employees. But also, the SABC uses freelancers a great deal. Most of our presenters and producers are freelance, so their figures wouldn't be reflected on the SABC's employment figures, because they are not employees of the organization, they are just service providers. And that goes with the production companies that we use. We would be using a production company that employs disabled people or is headed by disabled people, but it would not reflect on the SABC's employment statistics, because those people are service providers to the SABC. But we have many structures in the SABC that are trying to assist us with our employment equity figures. We have structures as well that provide support to people in the organization with disabilities, and just to educate everyone in the organization about the importance of dealing with issues of disability. There was also, clarity on the column that I present the figures that I presented. Okay, if we can just go back to the presentation. The first column is the day of the week that the program is flighted. The second is the description of the program, where you have soapy or documentary or, drama. The third one is the name of the program. And then the fourth column with 260 and 39, it refers to the frequency of the program on air. Either it's a weekly program like the 52, that's a weekly program. But the 104 is a season. For some of these programs are not flighted for the entire year. Maybe it's for 3 months, daily, over a duration of 3 months. So that would be the exact number of episodes
of that particular program per year. And then the next one would be the duration of the program, 24 minutes or an hour, which is 48 minutes. And 250 is the cost per minute to produce the subtitles. And then the last one is the total.
Okay. Olympics, yes, we don't have subtitles or anyone signing for the Olympics, because like I said, live programming and entertainment-based programming, it becomes very difficult because it happens, you know, as the events unfold, as you know, as everything is progressing. So subtitles are ideal for programs that are pre-recorded and most specifically programs that are produced locally, because the SABC can ask the production company that produces the program to make sure that they provide the subtitles, or when the SABC receives the tape, make that arrangement to have the subtitles. But with sport and entertainment, it's difficult because those programs are normally live, and you know, you can't really plan around them. The challenges of the SABC, the biggest challenge right now is funding. The funding model of the SABC is a very big challenge. Money will always be a challenge, but with the SABC, the funding model, we would like to move into a space where we don't have to worry that much about advertising revenue, because advertising, it also hampers the SABC in terms of delivering on its mandate, because some of the programs that we fly are international programs, which we have to have because they bring in revenue. They are popular with advertisers. And most of that time, like, you know, you will see with SABC3, there's more international content. And if we did not have, you know, this heavy burden of having to generate revenue, we could be using our money to produce more local programs and make sure that programs address the developmental challenges of the country. I don't know if I've answered all the questions. Have all your questions been responded or are we done?
Yeah, no. Honorable Chairperson, I just want to make the request that next time when we get the presentation, you didn't reflect some, because some are disabled, are consultants and so on. I'm sitting in communication. I know when we move around the country doing oversight, we often get complaints that when you talk to the staff of SABC in KwaZulu-Natal, even in Johannesburg itself, that some people are consultants or freelancers, but they earn more than those that are permanently employed. And the response of the CEO was that it is an international phenomenon that some people prefer to work somewhere else and only come in for particular programs as consultants or freelancers. And this is an international concept. You can't change it, because if somebody has those expectations that are so important, some of them would add more here and overseas. So the issue of consultancy, if really it pays, and the issue of freelancers, if they really, I mean, SABC did not dispute it. They endorsed it and said it is international. And you know, we in South Africa like to be world class. So if we are world class and you've got disabled people who are world class and well paid, but as freelancers or consultants, you should reflect it. because she asked if they earn good or well more than the permanent, why should they be excluded? Short term.
Well, it's a question that I think we can take up to our head of HR. There is one thing that we would like to say. Uayanda, the parliamentary liaison manager, will be in touch with the committee secretary to ensure that we have your program or your plan so that we don't get surprised when there's going to be a meeting. So, you know, if we have the plan ahead, then we can be able to plan properly. But also, just to correct the honourable member, the invitation was not sent to the province, it was sent to head office, but because head office had received it at short notice, they decided to delegate to the province. However, the information that we have shared with the members is from national, it's from our channel head, who are based in Johannesburg, who also could not attend.
Once more, let me thank you again for your presentation, and we regret that, you know, not sufficient time was given for us to be able to get more information. But as to the question of 2% target, that is the minimum. That is the minimum. 2% is the minimum target. Which actually we are far from reaching. So we would really add that despite the fact that you have most of your staff being freelancers, but that should be taken into consideration. Honourable members, I think we have come to the end of our meeting. Let me thank you and also thank the presenters. Honorable Chitelo.
I just want to find out as to whether did the chair get support about absent counsel or anything for them not being here.
I have received an email from the Department of Arts and Culture saying that the DG won't be able to attend, but the DDG and CEO of PENSAB will attend. Yeah, I'm not sure if they have a mic.
Well, we will make a follow-up. Thank you very much, crew from the SABC and the honourable members. Let me also thank you and everyone who is in there. Thank you very much, and the meeting is again. Thank you.